However, my name is Elijah Taylor, Minister of the Choctaw Apostolic Presbyterian Congregation on South of Choctaw in the Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is October 16, 2016, or it is Bull 16, 2020. We will start our first service today with a song entitled Till the Storm Passes By. In the dark of the midnight have I oft hid my faith, for the storms howl above me and there's no hiding place. Amid the crash of the thunder, precious Yah, hear my cry, keep me safe till the storm passes by. Till the storm passes over, till the thunder sounds no more, till the clouds roll farther from the sky. Hold me fast, let me stand in the hollow of the hand. Keep me safe till the storm passes by. Many times as Satan whispered, there is no use to try, for there's no end of sorrow, there's no by and by. But I know thou art with me, and tomorrow I'll rise, where the storm never darkens the sky. Till the storm passes over, till the thunder sounds no more, till the clouds roll forever from the sky. Hold me fast, let me stand in the hollow of the hand. Keep me safe till the storm passes by. When the long night has ended and the storm comes no more, to be standing in the present on the bright and peaceful shore, in a land where the tempest never comes beyond the hill, never see when the storm passes by. Till the storm passes over, till the thunder sounds no more, till the clouds roll forever from the sky. Hold me fast, let me stand in the hollow of the heart. Keep me safe till the storm passes by. The Yeshua of Righteousness, County Green, Volume 2, Number 35. We're going to start with, this is a Vicky House address, April 24th, 1948. It says, text for prayer, taken from Christ Object Lessons, page 67. The wheat develops first the blade, then the ear, after that the full corn in the ear. The object of the husbandman and the sowing of the seed and the culture of the growing plant is the production of grain. He desires bread for the hungry and seed for the future harvest. So the divine husbandman looks for a harvest as a reward of his labor and sacrifice. Yeshua is seeking to reproduce himself in the hearts of men. And he does this through those who believe in him. But the object of the Christian life is fruit bearing. reproduction of Yahshua's character in the believer, that it may be reproduced in others. The plant does not germinate, grow, or bring forth fruit for itself, but to give seed to the sower and bread to the eater. So no man is to live unto himself. The Christian is in the world as a representative of the Yahshua for the salvation of other souls. We shall now pray that we let Yahshua reproduce himself in us, and that through us he may work to reproduce himself in others. That we live not unto ourselves, that we remember that the Christian is to be a representative of the Yahshua in all things. Okay, that's in the prayer thought. Let's go right on into our lesson study. Vitalis titles, "The Lord Our Righteousness." You know, we have upgraded those pagan titles to the sacred name, and that would be the Yahshua, the Son's Our Righteousness. That's his Hebrew name. Our text is found in Jeremiah 23, beginning with the 5th verse down until the 8th inclusive. Our text is found in Jeremiah 23, beginning with the 5th verse down. Jeremiah 23:5. "Behold, the days come, saith the Yahshua, that I will raise unto David a righteous branch, and a king shall reign and prosper, and shall execute judgment and justice in the earth." Here is a prophecy of the first advent of the Yahshua, the righteous branch, who is to execute judgment and justice in the earth. Jeremiah 23:6. "In his days Judah shall be saved, and Israel shall dwell safely, and this is his name whereby he shall be called Yahshua, our righteousness." In his days, that is, in the days that the righteous branch is raised, in the days of Yahshua and the Christian era. Plainly, then, someday in the Christian period, inspiration makes known, Judah shall be saved, and Israel shall dwell safely on the earth. This promise, therefore, is made not unto the unbelieving Jews, but to the believing Christians, unto those who have made the Yahshua's righteousness their own. Nevertheless, these Christians, we are here told, are the descendants of both Judah and Israel, who as a result of the dispersion and also in joining the Christian church, have through the centuries lost their racial identity. The Christian church, therefore, according to the scriptures, is in the main made up of the descendants of Jacob, whose seed was to be made as the sand of the sea for multitude. They are to call Yahshua our righteousness. They will clearly see that their own righteousness is but filthy rags, and will fully make Yahshua's righteousness their own. Otherwise, they could not rightfully call him the Yahshua our righteousness. Jeremiah 23:7-8. "Therefore, behold, the days come, saith the Yahshua, that they shall no more say the Yahshua liveth, which brought up the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt, but the Yahshua liveth, which brought up and which led the seed of the house of Israel out of the north country, and from all countries where I had driven them, they shall dwell in their own land." Having come into the great gathering day in the Christian period, unto their deliverance from all countries, unto the second and antitypical Exodus, Isaiah 11:11, naturally they will not say, "Yahshua liveth that brought us up out of Egypt or out of Babylon," but "the Yahshua liveth that brought us up out of all the countries whither he had driven us." They give him the credit for their dispersion and for their gathering, and also for dwelling safely in their own land. These, you see, are not unbelieving Jews, but thoroughly converted Christians. they shall inhabit the land. Moreover, when this takes place, there will be no fear and no killing among Elohim's people. No guns fired, no bombs dropped on them. The people shall dwell safely, and the inhabitants shall not say, I am sick. The people that dwell therein shall be forgiven their iniquity. Isaiah 33:24. For I say to Yahshua, will be under her wall of fire round about, and will be the glory in the midst of her. Sing and rejoice, O daughter of Zion, for lo, I come, and I will dwell in the midst of thee, saith Yahshua, and many nations shall be joined to the Yahshua in that day, and shall be my people, and I will dwell in the midst of thee, and thou shalt know that the Yahshua of hosts has sent me unto thee. Zechariah 2:5, 10, and 11. So the important thing right now is to find out what Yeshua's righteousness is and how to make it our own righteousness so that we may have a right into his kingdom. But Yeshua, however, first desires to know what we have against him. Micah 6:3-5. O my people, what have I done unto thee? And wherein have I wearied thee? Testify against me. For I brought thee up out of the land of Egypt and redeemed thee out of the house of servants. And I sent before thee Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. O my people, remember now what Balak, king of Moab, consulted him, what Balaam, the son of Beor, answered him from Shittim unto Gilgal, that ye may know the righteousness of the Yahshua. Since we cannot think of anything that we might have against the Yahshua, we had better find out what Balaam's answer unto the Balak was, so that we learn what the righteousness of Yahshua is and how to make it our own. Let us therefore turn to the book of Numbers, chapter 23:16-17. And Yahshua met Balaam and put a word in his mouth and said, Go again unto Balak and say thus. And when he came to him, when he came to Balak, behold, he stood by his burnt offering, and the princes of Moab with him. And Balak said unto him, What hath the Yahweh spoken? Now let us hear Balaam's answer. Numbers 23:18-19. And he took up his parable and said, Rise up, Balak, and hear. Hearken unto me, thou son of Zippor. Yahweh is not a man that he should be, that he should lie, neither the son of man that he should repent. Hath he said, and shall he not do it? Or hath he spoken, and shall he not make it good? But Yahweh's righteousness, you see, is his integrity, his sure promises, his might to perform. He guarantees his promises, they fail, never fail. To have the righteousness of the Yahshua, therefore, is to have his integrity and faithfulness. And these we can never have so long as we mistrust him, never so long as we doubt his word. For to doubt is nothing short of calling him a liar. To doubt is the greatest offense one can commit. No one can doubt Elohim and still receive his blessings and promises. To have the righteousness of Yahshua, therefore, is to implicitly trust him without the reservation. And where does he expect us to begin? He wants us to begin with the thing that troubles us most, the temporal things of tomorrow. He wants us to learn that we cannot serve self and Yah and the Father too. Matthew 6:24-26. No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve the Yahweh, the Father, and Mammon, that's idolatry. Therefore I say unto you, take no thought for your life, which ye shall eat, or which ye shall drink, nor yet for your body, which ye shall put on. Is not the life more than meat, and the body than raiment? Behold the fowls of the air, for they sow not, neither do they reap, nor gather into barns, that your heavenly Father feedeth them? Are you not much better than they? These three verses plainly to say that to live, to make a living, and to worry how you are to fare tomorrow is nothing less than serving mammon itself, that you cannot serve self and Yahweh at the same time. If you serve Yahweh, you should be as free from worry as of the future as are the birds. Yes, you should be even more confident of his care, for you are worth more than are the birds. You are wholeheartedly to know that so long as you serve him, he will never leave you nor forsake you. Isaiah 41:17. When the poor and needy seek water, and there is none, and their tongue faileth for thirst, out of Yahweh will hear them, out of the Yahweh of Israel will not forsake them. Isaiah 49:15. Can a woman forget her sucking child, that she should not have compassion on the son of her womb? Yea, they may forget, yet will I not forget thee. Matthew 6:27-34. Which of you, by taking thought, can add one cubit unto his stature? And why take ye thought for raiment? Consider the lilies of the field. How they grow. They toil not, neither do they spin, and yet I say unto you that even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. Wherefore, if Yahweh so clothe the grass of the field, which today is and tomorrow is cast into the oven, shall he not much more clothe you, O ye of little faith? Therefore take no thought, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or wherewithal shall we be clothed? For after all these things do the Gentiles seek. For your heavenly Father knoweth that ye have need of all these things. But seek ye first the kingdom of the Father and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. Take therefore no thought for the morrow, for the morrow shall take thought for the things of itself. Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. Take no thought for the morrow, for it will take care of itself. Why cross bridges before you come to them? Why worry how you are to fill your stomachs, and with what you are to cover your bodies tomorrow, if they are cared for this day? Why worry about your own needs? Why not worry how to advance the kingdom of Yahweh, put in an advance overtime to make tents or cobble shoes for a living? Is all right if you do not say, I will do this and the other, and get money to buy and build this or that. You should instead say, if Yahweh permits, I will do this or that, so that I may get here or get there, do this and the other for the advancement of his cause. Whatever the aim behind your act, it must be for the advancement of his kingdom. Why not make your chief interest his business? Why not the kingdom of Elohim and his righteousness? So that all these things be added unto you. Why work to feed yourself? Why not work for Yahweh and let him feed and clothe you? He is far more capable of providing for you than you will ever be. Why not let him take charge of your work, of your home, of your body? While you do his bidding, he will fail you. Why not do this and be an altogether Christian? Why be a Christian in name, but a Gentile in heart and faith? Work no longer for self. Work for Yahweh and be free of worry, free of having to make your own living in your own way. For the fishermen of Galilee, while fishing in their own way, failed. But when they cast the net where Yeshua said they should cast it, it instantly filled with fish. Know first that Elohim is not interested in your selfish business, but in you and his saving business. There is therefore no need of you serving mammon itself, and at the same time expecting his blessing on mammon's interest. No man even in the world can work for his own interest and still expect his firm to promote him. or keep him at any post of duty. No employer hires persons because he wants his employee to make a living, but only because he wants his own business cared for. And know that Elohim's business is of greater importance and of further reaching consequences than any man's business, and that the Father's business is more particular than any man ever was or ever will be. Matthew 11:28-30. Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest unto your soul. For my yoke is easy, my burden is light. Always remember that Yahweh has not called you to your post of duty in order to feed you or to make you rich, but to give you and to save others through you. Therefore, whatever you do, do it for the glory of the Father. Then and then only will He provide all these things, the things Elohim sees fit to give. He will see that you earn your needs one way or another. Nothing less than the faith of Noah, of Job, and of Daniel will pay the bill. Brothers, sisters, because anything short of this is an insult unto Yahweh. That is the same as to call him a deceiver. Doubt in the promises of Yahweh completely robs the doubter of all of Yahweh's blessings and promises. Only when you learn to trust him will he be unto you as an hiding place from the wind and a covert from the tempest as rivers of water in a dry place, as a shadow of a great rock in a weary land, Isaiah 32:2. Seek ye first the kingdom of Yahweh and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. This promise held good in David's time, and it will hold good now. Psalms 4:5. Offer the sacrifice of the righteous and put your trust in the Yahweh. By personal experience, David knew Elohim's faithfulness. Having done all that was to be done in serving Yahweh, he was confident that when the bear and the lion came to devour his lambs, Yahweh would deliver him if he did all he could to spare them. Moreover, believing that Yahweh had promised the kingdom to him, and having been anointed to be king over Elohim's people, David doubted nothing, recognized his duty. He fearlessly went after the giant Goliath, who was defying Yahweh and his kingdom, and he was confident that the giant could not harm him. By faith, he freed his people from the power of the giant. By faith, he overcame the lion and the bear and saved the lambs. By faith, he knew that Saul could not take his life nor deprive him of the throne. No, there is neither beast nor man that can take your life or cheat you of promotion if you do Elohim's bidding. If you know that he who keepeth Israel neither sleeps nor slumbers, Psalms 121:3-4, that he knows all about you, my friends, every moment of the day and of the night, that he takes notice even of the hairs that fall from your head, that whatever befalls you is but Elohim's own will for your own good. I say, if you know and believe that he is Elohim and the keeper of your bodies and souls, then regardless what befalls you, you will be happy in it and give Yahweh the credit for it, not murmuring, but glorying even in your trials and affliction. Isaiah 26:4. Trust ye in the Yahweh forever, for in the Yahweh Elohim is everlasting strength. If you wholeheartedly trust in Yahweh, and if the world should fall into space and collide with the stars, you shall happily fly along with Yahweh. Let us now turn to 2 Corinthians, the first chapter, and see what Paul knew by experience about Yahweh's care over him. 2 Corinthians 1:8-9. For we would not, brethren, have you ignorant of our trouble which came unto us in Asia, that we were pressed out of measure of our strength, insomuch that we despaired even of life. But we had the sentence of death in ourselves, that we should not trust in ourselves, but in Yahweh, which raises the dead. Paul learned by personal experience that it is futile to trust in man and self, but that it pays high to trust in Yahweh, that he alone is able to protect and keep both body and soul. Psalms 127:1. Except the Yahshua build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Yahshua keep the city, the watchman waketh but in vain. Many of Elohim's faithful people had the same experience as Paul. Time, however, will not permit me to speak of more than a few. When we enter into the belief which the Bible recommends, then we are ready to enter into the experience which Elohim wants us personally to be in, which after all counts most to us. Let me first give you my own as a concrete example of what Yahweh does when we let him. So he says, while running a small hotel in the Middle West back in 1919, I became intensely interested in religion and providentially joined the Seventh-day Adventists. They were at the time meeting in a rented hall, not too attractive for a church. The people appeared to be very poor. Aside from the preacher, I was the only one that was driving a car, and he had a worn-out Ford that I would not have given a dollar for it if I had to drive it. Imagine now what went through my mind. You may know that I joined the church only for the truth's sake. Indeed, I had no other encouragement. My hopes of getting rich someday became a nightmare of getting poor. Yes, the devil gave me as good a picture of poverty as he gave the Yahshua a picture of the glory of the kingdom. I nevertheless resolved to stay by the truth I had learned, regardless what happened. Then the time came that I sold the hotel and accidentally got into a grocery business. But after a time, I found that I did not want to be in it, and I sold it at a loss. Then that dark and gloomy picture of coming poverty enlarged itself 100-fold. But I did my best to keep happy in the Yahweh. Sometime after I had disposed of the grocery store, I left the city. And 6 months later, I landed in California. There I took sick, and after doing all I knew what to do, one of the retired Seventh-day Adventist ministers that lived in the same place where I was living said, "Let me take you to the Glendale Sanitarium, and I will recommend you as of good and regular standing with the church, and they will give you good service and a lower rate, too." Well, we got to the desk, and after the minister told him all he had to say, the sanitarium clerk asked me what kind of a deposit I could leave for admission. I said, "A check." It somewhat surprised me, for I had been in a hospital before, but was never asked to pay anything in advance. No, not even when I was dismissed. They sent me the bill by mail. When he saw that the check was drawn on an Illinois bank, I had to explain that I was somewhat new in the West and had not yet transferred my bank account. The clerk reluctantly took the check, and I was assigned to a room, and politely told that I had to wait for the doctor until he should come around. Well, I waited all that day, but not a soul came. And in the evening, as sick as I was, I put on my clothes and went for supper into the dining room. Then I was told that the doctor was away, that he would see me just as soon as he came back. For 4 days this went on, and not a soul came into my room. I could have died, and no one would have known it until perhaps days thereafter. I suppose they had to get the money from the bank and find out if my credit was good before they would give me a service. Finally, on the 4th day, the sanitarium chaplain came with apologies for his delay to see me. "If I had known that you were a Seventh-day Adventist," he explained, "I would have seen you sooner." I was not expecting him, though, and it did not make much difference with me, but I said to myself, "If you did not know what I was, you should have come sooner." At last, the doctor came, and after a thorough examination, I was told that I was a very sick man and had to have a special day and night nurse to look after me and to give me the hydrotherapy treatment. With my consent, a student nurse came in, but when the shadows of evening stretched out over the sky, the nurse told me that they were short of special nurses, and so he himself was to wait on me all through the night if I let him move his cot into my room. All the time I was there, though, he never once got up at night to wait on me. And thus I had a private day and night nurse, and in the end I was charged 50 cents an hour, $6 daily for him to wait on me during the daytime, and $6 nightly for sleeping with me in the room. This, along with the additional charges, was a heavy drain on my already dwindling savings, and the picture of growing broke and staying poor grew larger and larger in my own mind. But I recovered from my illness and was thankful. This sanitarium incident, though, produced another disappointing picture in my mind. Is that sanitarium Yahweh's place for his sick people? I asked myself, is this people really Elohim's people? The answer that came to these questions was this: the sanitarium is Yahweh's and the church is Yahweh's, but the people that are running them are reactionary. They are the modern priests, scribes, and Pharisees. That there is a need for more Samaritans among them. This is where Elohim's truth is, though. And Elohim helping me, I said, I shall stay with it. Yes, Yahweh did help me. I kept the faith, complained about nothing, and stayed in the church with as good a record as any. After I left the hospital, however, I was weak and my bank account was almost depleted. It appeared to me, too, that there was nothing that I could get into with the Sabbath off, that I would fall to the mercy of some charity or else starve. Moreover, for several months I had sent neither tithes nor my pledges of offerings to the church in the Middle West. Consequently, I owed something like $75. I thought then that if I should fail to pay this debt now, while I had enough to pay it, I could never again get that much money together, or never have to stay unpaid forever. Better get broke now, I said, and be free of debt than to get broke later and to be a debtor forever. My bank account, I figured, was just a little over my debt. When I wrote the check for the whole balance and sent it to the church in the Middle West, I was left with $3.50 in my pocket and with no prospect of a job. Then I wrote to the bank in the Middle West that I was closing my account and that they should send the council checks and other papers to my address in California. At this point in my life, though, the table turned around as much as it turned with Abraham after he had done all but slay his son Isaac on the altar of Yahweh. Just a few days after I had written to the bank, I heard from them, and to my great surprise, they had enclosed a check for about $350 as my final balance. I never discovered how it happened. In the meantime, I got a job in a washing machine agency, and then just then the Seventh-day Adventists were having their 1923 camp meeting in Los Angeles. So I decided to attend between meetings to try to sell Maytag washers in the neighborhood. And what do you suppose? I sold a washer a day and a few vacuum cleaners on the side. This went on all the while the camp lasted. And my first check from the company was about $425. But this was not all. Just then another surprise overtook me. Some years before I had bought stock which I had made up my mind was worth this, but to my surprise, I received a letter in which the corporation inquired if I would like to sell it back to them, and the price they offered was more than double the price I had paid. Here I had a real experience all on my own, as promised in Malachi 3:10. Moreover, the Maytag agency was new, and when I went to work for them, they had but a small place. All the while I worked for them, though, they prospered and grew as did Laban, while Jacob worked for him. In 3 years' time, they opened branch offices all over the city of Los Angeles, and then erected a building of their own, which looked like a bank inside and out, one block deep and something like 60 feet wide. As to how their prosperity ended, I will tell you a little later. My unexpected success in selling washing machines was used as a boost pump to the other salesman, and the sales manager became very inquisitive about my religion. The last I talked with him, he said to me, "Harliff, it must be wonderful to believe as you do, but you know, How can there be a Seventh Heaven? I then asked, why could he not be? And he replied, because if I begin to keep the Sabbath as you do, I will lose my job. I said, it's better to lose your job than lose your life. And the conversation ended. But the next time I went into the office, I saw a wreath hanging on the door, and everything seemed to be upset. Then I was told that Mr. Harney, the sales manager, had suddenly taken sick the night before and died early that morning. About that time, the head bookkeeper, too, became interested in discussing religion with me. As time went on, I discussed the same I had discussed with Mr. Harney, and at last he, too, said, "Holly, it must be wonderful to feel as you do, but I can never be a Seventh-day Adventist." I said, "Why?" "Oh, how can I keep the Sabbath in my job, too?" he replied. "Well," I said, "it's better to lose your job than you lose your life, Mr. Barber." And surely enough, the next time I went into the office, I found everybody talking instead of working. And I was told Mr. Barber, the head bookkeeper, was found dead that morning in his room. Believe it or not, but this is what happened with both men after they sold their conviction for the price of a job. A little later, I thought that I should have something of my own instead. I continued to work for Mr. Sluter. So I was spending most of my time with experiments on health suites, and as I then sold a washer only now and then, I was not too popular with the company. And as the company owed me some commission, I decided to find out why they were held back. After discussing the matter several times with the sales manager, he put me off each time with the promise to see to it. But one day I pressed the matter harder. As a result, he said, "Rolf, I'm tired of this and I don't care. You can quit." Next time I went in, I learned that Mr. Lisco, the sales manager, was discharged and that Mr. Foster had taken his post. Mr. Lisco, you see, was the one who had to quit, not I. Then they went to see the new manager about my commission. He promised to investigate the matter and to let me know the next time I came in. He though, did the same thing Mr. Lisco did, and when I pressed the matter as hard as I did Mr. Lisco, he too said, "Holliff, I am tired of the thing and do not care if you quit." Peculiarly enough, though, the next time I went in, I was told Mr. Foster, the sales manager, was discharged and was no longer with the, company. I was still, by this time I had created enough business with my health suites to keep busy and was about to quit altogether. I then went to see Mr. Sluter himself about the aforementioned commission. But he received me very coldly and plainly told me that I had nothing coming. I quit. But in the space of about six months, I think it was, he lost the agency and another man took over the company. This is the way his prosperity ended. Not long after I had gone to work for this company, and while canvassing, I met a woman whose husband was of a Jewish descent, but she was Scandinavian and a Seventh-day Adventist. She told me that her husband was terribly opposed to her religion, and at one point he threw her Bible into the stove. She wished I could in some way help her husband change his attitude. I asked her to tell him that I would like to see him in his home the following night. She promised to try it and then to let me know. He sat down to share a study with me in his home with the family present. I was surprised, though, to find him very agreeable to what was presented. Although contrary to what his wife had told me, after I'd given him three studies, he called me aside, pulled his pockets inside and out, and said to me, "You see, I have a big family to feed and only 3 cents in my pocket. Before you came to me," he explained, "I did everything to get a job but failed. In my distress," he continued, "I prayed for the first time in my life. I asked Yahweh to send me someone to show me what to do. When I heard you were coming," he added, "I thought it was an answer to my prayer, and I was anxious to meet you, and that is why you found me so open-minded to your religion. But now he said, I know that Yahweh sent you. I asked him if he would try to sell washing machines, and he replied, I'm ready to do anything you suggest. I took him to the company I was working for, and he went to work immediately, trucking with his own pickup, his wages, and a few sales occasionally brought him over $200 monthly. He owned the house he was living in, and as living was not so high in those days, he was able to save a good share of his wages. After time, he sold his house, bought a 5-acre plot, and built a new house and a good poultry shed on the plot. Then he told me that he intended to work for the company about 18 months longer. By that time, he would have his house and land all clear, or somewhat clear, and then he would make a good living on his 5-acre plot. Well, it looked fine. It all looked fine, but one Sabbath morning he met me in church, told me that the company was to be taken over that day. He wanted to know if I would go with him and listen to the speeches while the transfer was being made. I reasoned with him that it was not the place to spend the Sabbath in, but he argued that if he were not present, they might hire another man his place, and he could not afford to lose his job. He therefore attended the business meeting. Shortly after, though, the new company discharged him. Consequently, he could not keep the payments on the property, and the trust company foreclosed on it, and his wife died. Anyone can see that all these sequential events of the day closely tied one to another with nothing else in between. It could not possibly have been accidental, but strictly providential. Now let me relate unto you another miracle that took place about that time. One Wednesday I drove to the business section of Los Angeles, having finished my business quite late in the afternoon, and while walking across the street I saw a woman driving toward me. But as I was almost to the middle of the street, I saw no danger, for there was plenty of room for her to drive by. She nevertheless turned her car right square into me. Yes, she struck me from my left, and being overly excited, she could not stop her car before she reached the middle of the block, and so she kept on going from the corner of the street to the middle of the alley. What happened to me when the car struck me? Did it lay me flat on the street and did it run over me? No, this did not happen, because something greater took place. An unseen hand carried me on ahead of the car, lightly sliding my feet on the pavement with my right hand ahead, my right side ahead, and my left side against the car's radiator. After having made about half the distance before the car stopped, something seated me on the bumper of the car, and I put my left arm around the car's left headlight. Then I said to myself, now, lady, you can keep on going if that is the best you can do. When she stopped, I put my feet on the ground and stepped away from the car. Just then I discovered that the pencil I had in my coat pocket had broken into half a dozen pieces from the impact, but my ribs were untouched. By that time, the car and I were surrounded with people, and three policemen searching for the man that got run over. But as they found no one lying on the street or pinned under the car, I told them that it was I who had been run over. They wanted to take me to the hospital, and when I told them that I was not hurt, I heard one say, he must be hurt, but he is too excited and does not know his condition. And they made me raise my legs and arms and up and down several times, after which one shouted, he's made out of rubber. The woman was accused of driving at 30 miles per hour. Then I walked three blocks to my car and drove to prayer meeting in Exposition Park Church, where in a season of testimony I told them of the accident and the result. We are still living in the days of miracles, you see. To all these and other expenses then came the message which we are now endeavoring to take unto the land of sin. The enemies of the message then left nothing unturned in their search for something against me. Rather than to make sure that they were not turning down truth, they tried every hook and crook to pin something on me and to stop my activity. but found nothing, and as a rule, about 30 members of the church stayed in my special meetings each Sabbath afternoon. Then came the time that the elders of the church refused to let us see the church for our meeting, and they made us all get out. But one of the sisters, who was living in a big house right across from the church, offered her place for the meeting, and there was a great uproar among the people around the church premises. Some were for us and some were against us. So it was at the house across from the church was filled that afternoon, and many listened from the outset through the windows. The enemies failed to break up our meetings, and the victory was ours. Next, they forbade us to attend their church services, and they began to disfellowship those who still wanted to attend our meeting. They tried to deport me, too, but failed, and they endeavored to get a court order against any of us going to the church on the Sabbath, but lost out. Once they called the police to have me arrested on false charges that I was disturbing the meeting. But after the officers in the police station heard my story and the deacon's charges against me, he commanded the two policemen who brought us to the station to put us in their car again and to take us right back to the church where they picked me up. After this, the elders endeavored to put me in an insane asylum. The city manager of the Glendale himself, at Seventh-day Adventist, had come to this church that Sabbath morning to lay down the charges and to see me carried away and locked in the asylum. After talking with me for a few minutes, though, the officer did nothing but to tell me that he would not bother me again. Then the 200-pound city manager fell smaller than my 135-pound weight. He did all of these unbecoming things and many others. Besides, they talked and preached against me, and though I had no one but the Yahweh to defend me at any time, yet in all of these the victory was mine. When we moved our office from California to Texas, where we had neither friend nor believer in the message, the church elders were glad and thought our work would then die out for sure. It nevertheless grew more than before, although this took place in the midst of the Depression, 1935, while hundreds and thousands of businesses were going bankrupt, while well-to-do men were becoming poor, yet we who started out with nothing grew and prospered. We, moreover, never took collections in any of our meetings anywhere and never made any calls for money. This holds good still. And too, our free literature that goes out week by week amounts to hundreds and thousands of dollars week after week and year after year, besides the cost of building the institution. And today, after going through the nightmare of supposing I might live a life of poverty, as I explained before, my credit is unlimited, and the checks I write amount to thousands of dollars week after week and year after year, although I'm not bonded, own no property, and have no personal bank account. Furthermore, I pay my secretaries as much as I pay myself, and some of my workmen I pay twice as much. Yes, there are as great miracles today as there ever were. Jacob, too, had no righteousness of his own, but he had a great zeal and respect for the righteousness of the Yahweh. Esau, though, who had no regard for the righteousness of the Yahweh, sold his birthright only for a mess of pottage. What a bargain was Jacob's. As a result, though, Jacob became a fugitive. The first night away from home, however, Elohim met him, and having given him a vision, Jacob put his whole trust in Yahweh and pledged to be faithful in all his duties. To start with, in Padan-Aram, Jacob had nothing but faith and zeal. He was only a good workman, but this is all, that is all. These qualities Laban immediately recognized in Jacob, and as a result, Laban not only offered to give Jacob his daughter, Rachel, for a wife, but even devised a scheme by which to force him to take both daughters, Rachel and Leah, the only girls in the family. Moreover, although Jacob dearly paid for them with 14 solid years, of hard, faithful labor, he in the next 6 years became rich. Then on returning home, he wholeheartedly, honestly, and with free conscience said to Laban, this 20 years have I been with ye, and thy ewes and thy she-goats have not cast their young, and the rams of thy flock have I not eaten. Genesis 31:38. Still further, when he was asked what he wanted for his work after the 14 years is over, he chose the wages Yahweh would pay, not Laban. For he said to Laban, thou shalt not give me anything, but let me pass through all of thy flock today and remove from thence all the speckled, spotted, and brown cattle, sheep and goats, and take them 3 days' journey apart from the rest, to that there be no chance of them getting mixed. Today, all the sheep and cattle speckled or unspeckled are to be yours. But hereafter, all the speckled that shall be born from among the unspeckled, the apparently impossible, shall be mine for serving thee. Laban was well pleased with the contract, and Jacob went to work. Yahweh blessed Jacob and labors in spite of the natural impossibility, and within 6 years he became rich. Why? Because Jacob served Yahweh wholeheartedly and implicitly trusted in him for his living. He wanted nothing but what Elohim would let him have. He knew that so long as he worked for the Yahweh, Yahweh would leave him nothing hungry or naked. He knew that if Yahweh so clothed the grass of the field, he would clothe and feed him in his vineyard. Since Jacob was getting rich so fast, since his father-in-law wanted him to stay longer, and also since Jacob still feared Esau, why did he leave Laban and why did he start for home? The answer is simple, because Yahweh asked him to, the same. In Genesis 31:13, I am the Elohim of Bethel, where thou anointest the pillow, and where thou vowedest to a vow unto me. Now arise, get thee out from this land, and return unto the land of thy kindred. On the record you see, Jacob was faithful at his post of duty, and always mindful of Yahweh's command. Are we like Jacob, or are we like the Judas Iscariot? Jacob is now, you know, took perfect care of Laban's business, and followed Elohim's direction all the way. But Judas Iscariot took perfect care of his own selfish interest at the expense of Elohim's gift, and rather than following the Yahweh's direction, he followed his own. Now, though compare Jacob's end with that of Judas, one's work ended in glory, and the other ended in shame and disaster. For whom are you working, brother, sister? For yourself or for Yahweh? You say for Yahweh, and I hope you are right. But remember, as I said before, that no business firm will promote a workman that is not interested at least as much as in the prosperity of his firm as he is in the size of his wages. Moreover, no firm is interested in the workman's private business. It is interested in his own business. Elohim's business, though, is far more important and far greater consequence than the business of any man. He, too, is not at all interested in your selfish business. He is interested in his business of saving souls. You cannot, therefore, make your own interest of first importance and his of second, and at the same time expect to reap his promises and expect him to answer your prayer. If such be the case, then you are even falsely calling yourself a Christian. According to Matthew 6:32, you are still a deluded Gentile. To be a Christian in Yahweh's sight, you must never praise yourself, but praise Elohim and his giving. Never boast of your own interest and achievement, but boast of Yahweh. Never try to promote your business, but always try to promote Yahweh. Never pray for life to know what to do and where to go in order that your business, your interests prosper, but rather pray for life that Elohim help you do the thing or go to the place where you would best serve his cause, that he leads you and teach you how to advance his kingdom, then and then only will you find that you never go wrong. Any motive other than this will take you where Elohim does not want you, and where you will have to carry your own burden independent of Him. I have seen a number of individuals swear by heaven and earth that Yahweh has led them here or there, into this or into the other. But when things did no peace to them, then they packed away swearing just as hard that Elohim had not led them into the thing, and again swear just as hard as before that Elohim has taken them out of it and into something better. They again felt just as positive that Elohim was leading in their move, though it was the opposite of what they thought He had to lead them in before. He had led them in before. He said, others have felt that Elohim had opened the way for them to do this or the other, about the fact that they had been able to get the money for the trip, or to get a buyer for something or another, to have this and to have that. Still, others told me that they opened the Bible at random and that their eyes dropped on a verse which indicated Elohim's approval of their move. One brother told me that he had flipped a coin, and another had found an Indian arrow pointing in the direction he should go. All these I have seen come to naught, although these indications were held as positive evidences of Yahweh's will in the matters under question. Let me now tell you that these indications in themselves are but presumption of the highest form, hallucination and gambling, not Elohim's signs at all. Moreover, anyone's plans, which are based on purely selfish interest, based purely on where and how one may better his private profit-making projects while he professes to be a Christian, I tell you that all these are schemes, not Elohim's plans at all, regardless how the way opens or what happens. The fact is that Elohim has never given the opportunity to direct in these things. For to give Him the opportunity, He says, seek ye first the kingdom of Elohim and His righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. This brings the close of our study. This is our contest. That's his 11th hour call, and that's number 11. Click on our audio archives. We're going to close now with a song. He Comforts Me, a song that I wrote January 12th, 1990.
He comforts me when my heart is in despair. He tends to my heart when no one seems to care. He visits me in the night when I'm alone. Heaven is my home. When evening shadows are bringing on the night, and the heavenly bodies are shining so bright, my heart keeps singing, for it's a beautiful sight, for the brightest star. So turn the sound of the torch of the house, sound the trumpet for the battle is nigh. Like Gideon's army, our numbers are few, and laws are captain, we will battle soon. As a child I come to thee, I count my blessings from the life that's been set free. And God is near, I never feel alone. He is my Savior.
Who at my door standing? Who at my door is standing? Patient. saints of Israel, help Christ in demanding. His is the voice I hear. Sweetly the tongues have fallen, open the door for me. If thou wilt heed my calling, I will abide with thee. All through the dark times dreary, knocking again is he. Yeshua, thou not weary, waiting so long for me. Sweetly the tongues are falling, open the door for me. If thou wilt heed my calling, I will abide with thee. Door of my heart, I hasten, thee will I open wide. No evil you can chasten, thee shall with me abide. Sweetly the tongues are falling, open the door to me. If thou wilt heed my calling, I will abide with thee.